Robert Bly. Cemetery in the City. Beyond the iron gates set into the walls, black earth only with no trees or grass, but wooden benches on which some old men sit at dusk saying nothing. Buildings surround the cemetery, small grocery shops, streets with playing children, trains pull by near the graves. The district is run down. The rain-soaked rags hang from the windows like patches on the gray building fronts. The inscriptions are already gone from the stones of the bodies dead 2 centuries, having no friends to forget them, dead in secrecy. Yet when the sun wakes, for the sun does shine a few days in June, the ancient bones should feel something down there in the earth. No leaves, no birds, only the stone, earth. Is hell like this? Here suffering is never forgotten. Noise and misery, chill, abundant and hopeless. The dead do not find their sweet and silent sleep in this place, where life continues constantly among the graves, as a whore pushes on with her trade under the calm stars. When the night falls from the overcast heavens and the smoke from the factories dies down as gray dust, out of the bars nearby come voices, and soon a train that stirs up as it goes by, long echoes like a church bell full of rage. It is not the last judgment yet, you dead with no name. Rest now, sleep, if you are able to sleep. It's possible God has forgotten you too.
Well, we're coming now to the end of the first half of the program and the 27th generation. So we're going to read something to Vicente Alexandre now. We got the Nobel Prize a few weeks ago. So if you can imagine this all strung out in time, as it sort of is, even when the poets are young, you can see what Vicente had to choose from. The incredible sadness of Cernuda, and the delicacy of El Verde. So we'll show you what he did do. I knew I'd mentioned, and I did too in a little piece I did, that with Alexandre you can feel very much the influence of Freud. It's obvious that the work on the unconscious had influenced Lorca tremendously. And it was Freud specifically who influenced Vicente Alexandre, with the suggestion that underneath everything that apparently is going on in our daily lives, all that 18th century stuff that Spain was so crazy about, all of that stuff is permeated by tremendous sexual energy, which Europe has been trying to forget about since Tristan was older. And that this energy is not to be forgotten about, and this energy is pressing up farther and more intensely, even in Vienna. So you can imagine, after Alexandre read in the 20s, he read Freud and said, "My God, what if that's true?" And then he went to a formal ball. And this is the poem he wrote, called The Waltz. I read it in English and then you'll have it in Spanish. The Waltz. "You are beautiful as a stone, oh my dead woman. Oh, my living, living woman, you are beautiful, you are happy as a ship. The orchestra which stirs up my worries like a thoughtlessness, like an elegant witticism in a fashionable drawl, knows nothing of the down and the secret mound, knows nothing of the laugh, that rises from the breastbone like an immense baton. A few waves made a brand, a bit of sawdust in the eyes, or perhaps even on the temples, or perhaps decorating the women's hair. Trailing skirts made of alligator tails. Some tongues or smiles made of the shells of crabs. All these things that have been seen so often can take no one by surprise. The ladies wait for their moment seated upon a tier, keeping their dampness hidden with a stubborn fan. And the gentlemen, abandoned by their buttocks, try to draw all looks toward their mustaches. But the waltz is here. It's a beach with no waves. It's a clashing together of seashells, heels, foam, and false teeth. It's churned up things arriving, exultant breasts on the serving tray of arms. Sweet cakes fallen on the weeping shoulders, a languorousness that comes over you again, a kiss taken by surprise just as it turns into cotton candy, a sweet yes of grass, glass painted green. Powdered glass in the forehead to give a simple whiteness to the polished words, and the hands grow short and rounder than ever and wrinkle up the dresses as though they were sweet as sparkle glass. The heads are clouds, the music is a long piece of rubber, the tails made of lead almost fly, and the noises turn into waves of blood inside the heart, and into a white liqueur that tastes of memories or a rendezvous. This is a stanza that got him in trouble in Spain. Goodbye, goodbye, emerald, amethyst, secret. Goodbye, the instant has arrived like an enormous ball, the precise moment of nakedness head down, when the downy hair begins to penetrate the obscene lips that know. It is the instant of pronouncing the word that explodes, the moment in which the dresses will turn into birds, the windows into cries, the light into help, and the kiss that was over there in the corner between two mouths will be changed into a fishbone that will distribute death, saying, I love you.
Eres hermosa como la piedra, oh difunta, oh viva, eres dichosa como la nave. Esta orquesta que agita mis cuidados como una negligencia, como un elegante bien decir de buen tono, ignora el vello de los pubis, ignora la risa que sale del estertón como una gran batuta. Una sola se afreche un poco de serrín en los ojos o si acaso en las sienes, o acaso adornando las cabelleras, unas faldas largas hechas de colas de cocodrilo, unas lenguas o unas sonrisas hechas con caparazones de cangrejos. Todo lo que está suficientemente visto no puede sorprender a nadie. Las damas aguardan su momento sentadas sobre una lágrima, disimulando la humedad a fuerza de abanico insistente. Y los caballeros, abandonados de sus traseros, quieren atraer todas las miradas a la fuerza hacia sus bigotes. Pero el vals ha llegado. Es una playa sin ondas, es un entrechocar de conchas, de tacones, de espumas, de dentaduras postizas. Es todo lo revuelto que arriba. Pechos exuberantes en bandeja en los brazos, dulces tartas caídas sobre los hombros llorosos, una languidez que revierte, un beso sorprendido en el instante que se hacía cabello de ángel, un dulce sí de cristal pintado verde. Un polvillo de azúcar sobre las frentes da una blancura cándida a las palabras limadas y las manos se acortan más redondas que nunca mientras fruncen los vestidos hechos de esparto querido. Las cabezas son nubes, la música es una larga goma, las colas de plomo casi vuelan y el estrépito se ha convertido en los corazones en oleadas de sangre en un licor, sí, blanco, que sabe a memoria o a cita. Adiós, adiós, esmeralda, amatista o misterio. Adiós, como una bola enorme ha llegado el instante el preciso momento de la desnudez cabeza abajo, cuando los vellos van a pinchar los labios obscenos que saben. Es el instante, el momento de decir la palabra que estalla, el momento en que los vestidos se convertirán en aves, las ventanas en gritos, las luces en socorro, y ese beso que estaba en el rincón entre dos bocas se convertirá en una espina que dispensará la muerte diciendo: yo os amo.
The thing that marks these early poems of Alexander's more than anything else is this sense of, even though he was sick during the war and didn't leave Spain, he has a feeling of being in exile, but not from his country, but from everything. And as if the unconscious of those forces of the natural world or something were visible, but at a distance that couldn't be seen. So even the light in the early poems is kind of cold, unlike Lorca's. And so I'm going to read two of these poems from really before 1940. One of them is called Man Doesn't Exist. Only the moon suspects the truth, and it's that man doesn't exist. Solo la luna sospecha la verdad, y es que no existe el hombre. The moon feels its way over the fields and crosses the rivers. It probes into the woods. It gives a shape to the still warm mountains. It runs into the heat from built-up cities. It forms a shadow and kills a dark corner. And its flashing roses flood the mystery of the caves where there is no odor. The moon chants a tune and understands and moves and goes on and on without stopping. An ocean isn't a bed where a man's body can stretch out all alone. An ocean isn't a shroud to cover up a luminous death. The moon keeps going. It scratches and soaks and sinks into the packed sand. It gives the calm green murmurs and incredible motion. A corpse stands up and sways for a moment. He wavers and then goes on. He stops, green and still. The moon alters his broken arms, his stern gaze where some fish are nestling. The moon sets fire to the sunken cities where you can still hear, how pleasing, the clear bells, where the last ripples still echo over the neuter breast, over the soft breasts that some octopus has worshipped. But the moon is always pure and dry. It comes from an ocean that's always a container, that's a block of stone whose limits no one can cut down, an ocean that isn't a rock glowing on top of a mountain. The moon comes out and chases what used to be a man's bones, what used to be his blood vessel, what used to be his sonorous blood, his prison full of songs, his invisible waste that divides life, or his head, light head, going east on the wind. But man doesn't exist. He has never existed, never. But man doesn't live as the day doesn't live. But the moon invents his furious metals. So you can see these are thick poems. And I'm from Boston, and we were going to have a little celebration in honor of Alexander, so we called up a guy who teaches at Harvard who's involved with Alexander. He said, well, I don't know if we should, you know, have a students read and so forth. He says, let's have a formal evening, and we'll all wear ties and have an homage to him and stuff like this. So we decided, I thought, it's sort of threw a bucket of water over the idea, but we decided that if they were going to have that evening, that we would show up with lobsters
and bring them up and leave them on the stage. They could try to read these. So here's one. This is the jungle and the sea. So he looks at the jungle. Usually there's an ocean or something standing between him and what he's trying to figure out. Over in the distance, near the lights or the knives that are still new, there are tigers as big as hate, and lions like a heart covered with hair, and blood like weary sadness, and all of them are fighting with the yellow hyena who disguises himself as the greedy, greedy sunset. Such whiteness and the dark circles around those withered eyes. When the animals draw their swords or teeth, like blood out of a heart that doesn't know anything except love. Blood that beats so clearly in their jugular veins, and you can't tell if the thing that gleams on their white teeth is love or hate. To run a hand through that surly mane, while the powerful claw sticks in the ground, while the trembling roots of trees feel the claw go deeper like a love that sinks in that way. To stare into those eyes that only burn at night, and where a little fawn, eaten a while ago, can still be seen flowing, a tiny reflection of the black gold, a goodbye that shines for a tenderness beyond death. The tiger, the hunting lion, the elephant that wears some soft necklace around its tusks, the cobra that looks like a lover's fire, the eagle that fondles its rock as if it were a hard brain, the little scorpion who dreams of oppressing an instant of life with nothing but its claws, and the foolish presence of a human body that could never be confused with the jungle, and that happy level where the wise little vipers nest in the armpit of the moss, while the elegant mealy bug sneaks down a magnolia leaf that feels like silk. And when the murmur of the forever virgin forest rises up like two golden wings, wing covers, a trumpet, or a rounded sounding shell, then the whole jungle shakes with music in front of a sea which will never mix its waves with the small, soft branches. The branches at the top are formed by quiet waiting, by that hope which stays green forever, bird, paradise, elegance of untouched feathers. The jaws of music, the powerful claws, the love that digs itself in, the burning blood that spatters out of a wound will never reach those branches. No matter how far up it spurts, no matter how much this earth's hearts try to open and throw their pain up or their greed into the blue sky. Bird of happiness, blue bird or feather, above the deafening sound of the savage, lonesome animals, the sound of lovemaking, or the whipping of sterile tree trunks, looking out toward the distant sea that recedes like the light.
Blue, the old man is like Moses.
Robert's going to read one of my versions, and then I'm going to read the last one. All right?
Should you join?
We know that we're giving you too much poetry in one night. Is that right? No?
Maybe we should take a break. And
we will. But what we wanted to show you is just the terrific richness of this generation. And so it'll be in two parts. So we're giving a reading here in the first part, and it was Hardy St. Martin who got all this stuff together. Hardy is the one who started to write to the poets. I mean, one of the ideas was that when a poetry like the 27th generation comes along, so there's so much feeling and thought in it, that it is somehow you really need American poets to work on it. So Hardy started to do this and get a hold of poets instead of doing it literally, and wrote hundreds of letters and got all the poets translated, didn't know any Spanish at all, with Hardy's help. And so the second half of the program, we want to deal more with Hardy himself. And Hardy's very shy, and has never been known to speak more than four or five words at one time. And then there's the tide in Barcelona and Brado over here, right? So we're going to read two more poems of Alexander, and then we're going to have a 10-minute break. Then we're going to come back, and then Hardy's going to make a few remarks on what has happened to Spanish poetry after what you have experienced. And a couple of the younger poets. And then we're going to present him with the award. And so that's what we'll do. I'll read this poem, and then and Lou is going to read that wonderful poem, Old Man and the Sun. And someone has printed up for you the poem on each. We have 500 copies of it, so each one of you can take it home with you. Okay, I'll read this one. It's a deathbed poem, A Man on His Deathbed. This is part two. Translated by Lewis Hyde. This is Vincente Alexander again. He lay there watching at the end. He watched and wanted so much to speak. Some faded letters appeared over his lips. Love. Yes, I was in love. I love. I love so much. He lifted his frail wife's hand, and suddenly a bird was flying in the bedroom. His breath kept saying, I love so much. Outside the black night window, the light sent a glow over his mouth that had stopped drinking from that worn-out light. He opened his eyes. He put his hand to his chest, and he said, listen to me. No one could hear a thing. A strange smile lowered its smooth mask like a veil over his face, rubbing it out. There was a little wind. Listen to me. Everyone strained their delicate ears. Listen. And they heard it. Pure and crystal tone. The silence.
We're going to, because Alexandre is the spotlight now, we're going to do two of his poems at the very end of the evening. So I'll read that one then. This, I'll read a short one now, and then we'll end this half.
When do they get their things?
Later.
You have to stay for the second half before you can get your things. Yeah, that's for longevity. You get that. As you can tell, these later poems, like that one and the one I'm about to read, are easier to go into. And he said of the book that really began that style of poetry for him, that he began it as a work of love, and apparently he came closer to people. If you get this little book that Robert had printed of 20 poems, and you find the early ones, The Loneliness Too Thick, skip around and read the later ones and then go back, because there's really two kinds of poetry that he wrote. This is a poem from the last book that I've seen of his, from 1968, called Poemas de la Consumación. And these are old men, old man's poems, and this is called The Old Man Is Like Moses. Like Moses on top of the mountain, every man can be like that and deliver the word and lift up his arms and feel how the light sweeps the old road dust from his face. Because the sunset is over there, looking behind him, the dawn. In front, the growing shadows. And the lights began to shine. He swings his arms and speaks for the living from inside his own death, all alone. Because, like Moses, he dies, not with the useless tablets and the chisel and the lightning in the mountains, but with the words broken on the ground, his hair on fire, his ears singed by the terrifying word, and the breath is still in his eyes, and the spark in his lungs, and his mouth full of light. A sunset is sufficient for death, a serving of shadow on the edge of the horizon, a swarming of youth and hope and voices. And in that place, the generations to come, the earth, the borderline, the thing that the others will see. So we'll break for about 10 minutes now and then.
He wrote this poem, Alberto Rojas Jimenez Comes Flying. And I mention this because he went there and with a friend, and they took two bottles of wine, and they celebrated his friend's death. But I go in there every day, not to pray, but to look for Neruda and to think. It's my favorite spot. And I had thought of going there to take a short message and send it here for my friend. Instead, I had to come over. Anyway, I always call all of them, so I thought I would have to. And I don't know, they want to talk about poetry. The thing right now in Spain, the most important thing is politics, pornography, and then third, poetry. So there isn't much to say about poetry except that it's really relegated to third place. For instance, last week, a magazine that's equivalent to a Playboy had all these nudes, and there were about 6 or 7 pages illustrating Lorca's La Casada Infiel, the faithless wife. This young couple is making love, which is a horrible thing to do to Lorca, actually, but that's what's in fashion now. And there are other magazines where, political magazines that are also have pornography, where they invite writers to write poems or pages of stories and things like that, so it's all mixed in together. And I haven't really found any exciting new poetry, Spanish poetry. Right now, the young poetry that's most exciting is the Catalan, I think. And of course, that's quite natural because they finally let them open their mouths and they can speak their own language and really start experimenting and doing things that people who are writing in Spanish have stopped doing because they're busy with politics and busy rewriting poetry that the social poets wrote right after the war, Blas de Otero and Hierro. They did it well because it was done with a strong feeling of repression and they had to get something out. Now the people who are writing it, it's more the second hand, I think. They're also writing a lot of metaphysical poetry, poetry that was written here a long time ago and is kind of dead. So I hope that something's going to happen soon and comes back up again. I don't know what else Robert wants to say about poetry. So, you want to ask any questions?
Do I want to ask any questions? Why don't you sing a song?
No, I think that what I could say about Spanish poetry is already said in the introduction to the anthology. I don't think I can add much more to it. I'm not trying to make you buy the books, by the way.
But, you're going to make a living now, Harvey. What are you going to make a living?
Oh. Well, I've translated a book on sociology about it, which I know absolutely nothing. 637 pages on the theory of sociology, the history of sociology in Latin America. And I committed myself to it sight unseen. I saw it and I was shocked. And right now I'm trying to get out of it. But I have to do it. It's the best offer I've had for translating the book
my whole life.
How's that? Wow.
I don't think there's more I have to say. My friends here have said everything for me, and I thank them all. I thought I'd just come up here and grab my check and run, but I see.
He gets his check later, these yeah. First.
I feel like some of the Spanish falling out when I'm looking for all down like color. So. You know, I don't have anything to do with flowers. Anyway, I'm going to let them go ahead and read. Okay. Thank you.
I would like to read one poem by Miguel Hernández. Hernández died in 1942. You might think of him as a casualty of the Franco years. There might be a tendency to feel he's only 32 years old, and he wasn't able to see his family. He was in prison. Isn't that too bad? Yet when I think about him and about his poems, I realize that any sentimental kind of pity is wasted on this man. Now here's one of his poems. It's called The Wounded Man. And he did fight. He was hurt. His subtitle is For the Wall of a Blood Hospital. The wounded stretch out across the battlefields. And from that stretched field of bodies that fight, a wheat field of warm fountains springs up and spreads out into streams with husky voices. Blood always rains upward toward the sky. And the wounds lie there making sounds like seashells. If inside the wounds there is the swiftness of flight, essence of waves. Blood smells like the sea, and tastes like the sea and the wine cellar of the sea of rough wine, breaks open where the wounded man drowns, shuddering, and he flowers and finds himself where he is. I am wounded. Look at me. I need more lives. The one I have is too small for the consignment of blood I want to lose through wounds. Tell me who has not been wounded. My life is a wound with a happy childhood. Pity the man who is not wounded, who doesn't feel wounded by life and never sleeps in life joyfully wounded. If a man goes toward the hospitals joyfully, they change into gardens of half-opened wounds, of flowering oleanders in front of surgery with its blood-stained doors. Thinking of freedom, I bleed, fight, manage to live on. Thinking of freedom, like a tree of blood, generous and imprisoned, I give my eyes and hands to the surgeons. Thinking of freedom, I feel more hearts than grains of sand in my chest. My veins give up bone, and I enter the hospitals and I enter the rolls of gauze as if they were lilies. Thinking of freedom, I break loose in battle from those who have rolled her statue through the mud, and I break loose from my feet, from my arms, from my house, from everything. Because where some empty eye pits dawn, she will place two stones that see into the future and cause new arms and new legs to grow in the locked flesh. Bits of my body I lose in every wound will sprout once more, sap-filled, autumnless wings. Because I am like the locked tree, and I sprout again. Because I still have my life. One more by Hernandez. He was in prison. And he has a poem called Lullabies of the Onion, dedicated to his son, baby, after receiving a letter from his wife saying that all she had to eat was bread and onions. That's weird. You remember that little place in Don Quixote where the kid has been beaten up by the farmer and then rescued by Don Quixote and then gets beaten up again when Quixote leaves, meets Quixote on the road and says, why don't you mind your own business? You're running around doing good everywhere and all you did was get beaten up again. Quixote gives a big long harangue speech about, you know, a lot of abstractions. The kid doesn't understand, and Sancho is standing there. The kid says, what's he talking about? Sancho's saying, I don't know. You got anything to eat? This piece of bread, all right? Fantastic. Lullabies of the Onion. The onion is frost, shut in and poor, frost of your days and of my nights. Hunger and onion, black ice and frost, large and round. My little boy was in hunger's cradle. He suckled on onion blood, but your blood is frosted with sugar, onion, and hunger. A dark woman dissolved into moonlight spills thread by thread over the cradle. Laugh, child, you can drink moonlight if you have to. Lark of my house, laugh freely. Your laughter in your eyes is the world's light. Laugh so much that hearing you, my soul will beat through space. Your laughter frees me, gives me wings. It banishes loneliness, tears down these walls. Mouth that flies, heart that flashes on your lips. Your laughter is the supreme sword, conqueror of flowers and larks, rival of the sun, future of my bones and of my love. The flesh flutters as sudden as an eyelid. Life, as never before, takes on a new color. How many linnets, wings beating, take off from your body? I woke from childhood. Don't you ever. I wear my mouth sadly. Always laugh. Stay always in your cradle, defending laughter, feather by feather. You are a flight so high, so wide, that your flesh is heaven just born. If only I could climb to the origin of your flight. In the eighth month, you laugh with five orange blossoms, with five little ferocities, with five teeth, like five young jasmine buds. They will be the frontier of kisses tomorrow, when you feel a gun in your mouth, when you feel a burning past the teeth, searching for the center. Fly, child, on the double moon of her breast. It is saddened by onions. You are satisfied. Never let go. Don't ever know what's coming, what goes on.
Hernandez died in prison, got tuberculosis, and Franco just quite couldn't get a doctor that could do anything. Always got the wrong doctor, sent him in at the wrong time. His death was a little like Biko's in the way. I think he died when he was, what, 36?
32.
We're going to read two more poets younger than Hernandez, Blas de Otero and Gloria Fuerte. I'll read you one poem of Blas de Otero. I heard of Blas de Otero through Hardy. I don't remember when I met Hardy. I was editing a magazine and I was living in New York, maybe 59 or 60. And I think it was a knock at the door. And this man came to the door. And I said, what do you have? He said, I have a selection of 8 or 9 of the young poets in Spain. And I said, what have you been doing with them? He brought them around to the reviews you have in New York. And he'd gotten a great big yawn out of Blas de Otero and others. And I read a poem of Blas de Otero there and was amazed. I think this is one of the poems that he brought with him the first time he came. So Hardy has introduced all of these poets. Blas de Otero, he did the only translations of Blas de Otero that are still out. And here's one of his translations, chapter 10, book 2. He told me a couple of details about Blas. He knows him well. For a while under the Franco dictatorship, there was a tremendous amount of censorship problems. Evidently, one thing Blas would do would go to a large group in Spain and read to them. And he would read them a line, when the blue sky comes down with birds all around. And everyone knew it was from Quevedo or something, and the next line was, then all tyrants will die. And he'd read the first line, pause a minute, and then put in, and then little blue alligators will scamper across the sky. And the censors couldn't do anything. Didn't hear a thing. I was deformed like an angel fallen among cottons in a courtyard, like those terrible pieces of sculpture in which maternity gives birth to beauty. Because at 32, I have known things worse than despair. And a woman caressed me between the thighs of mountains filled with blood, so slowly and insistently that the butterflies sheltered in my pocket groaned. I recall the time I was about to murder my shadow, simply because of a tiny deformity which could be observed under the left nipple of my soul. But everything is over and done with, so that fortunately time glides in through the poplars and spring cracks its long green whip. But when I am jolted by the memory of how horribly I have treated myself and of the nights tangled around my throat without a drop of moonlight to take care of my thirst, and all at once years and years spent in the solitude of public sidewalks comes rushing in, years spent in the hopelessness of doctors' waiting rooms, on the edges of confessionals, next to the cold skirts and the newest load of sallow girl shifting, without even a book handy to serve as a makeshift pillow for my head, or a little flower or anything for which it would be worth dying at that moment. When these memories jolt me, I suddenly realize how hideous everything is, and I resign myself to being ashes, lonely ashes, damp with tears. Shall I give you one more chance? Here's a much more recent one. Censored. She fell asleep in the kitchen like a dish rag. Her job didn't earn enough to die on. She let herself slip onto the kitchen bench like a rag and slipped into sleep without forgetting. The poor, as a matter of course, give birth to these scrofulous girls who wear nothing but one old worn-out dress over their bones. Run out and look at them, you hypocrites. Write to heaven about the situation here. Corrupt your student teachers into having a good look at this. Spanish children freezing in the sun, not exactly the sun of justice. I'm going to protest. I've been protesting a long time. Their pain makes me suffer so that sometimes I jump up and down in the middle of the street. And I won't shut up, no matter how much they make the sign of the cross on my forehead, on my lips, or on my poems. Thank you.
I'm going to read a small short poem by Gloria Fuertes, and Carmen will read the Spanish. Gloria Fuertes is known mostly for her light and playful verse, and she's a lot of her poems have a bit of the clown in them. I think this poem goes a little bit contrary to that. It's called Bird's Nest.